Okay, welcome to BCM this morning. I have two quick stories, very quick stories to tell. The first is about my daughter, Ava. She played soccer in Edwards this spring and for a team in the Edwards team. So I had to drive out to Edwards multiple times most weeks for games and practices and that kind of stuff. And she had two friends on the team that were also from Summit. So we would carpool. Most of the times that we drove there, it takes about 50 minutes or so to drive there. Most of the times that we drove there, her and her two friends were just laughing and screaming the entire way. They had this one game that they would like, they would be laughing and this and that. And they had this game, they call it Five Star? What's it called?
Yeah.
Five Star. So there was all sorts of things they would do, but they would always try and sneak in a Five Star, which is they're wearing shorter shorts because they're playing soccer, and the one of them would just slap their thigh as hard as they could, try and leave a red mark. Anyway, there was only three girls, but it was as loud as a full school bus. It was like, it was incredible how loud it was. First story. Second story is about Bella. And when Bella was around kindergarten age, she learned to play the card game War. And she loved to play War with anybody that would play it with her. But there were times that there was nobody that she could play it with. And on those occasions, she would deal two hands and play against herself. And one time, I was working, I'm sitting at the computer, I'm working, and Bella's playing War against herself, and I hear her gasp, and she goes, "Ah, Dad, I won!" And she was obviously having a lot of fun. So anyway, two short stories. I'm curious if you guys, what do you guys see in those stories? Is there anything you see in those two short stories? It's okay if you don't, I'm just curious. Laughter, fun, yes. Yeah, he's no fun. Creativity, yeah, creativity.
I think War Against Myself would be an awesome band name.
That would be an awesome band name. Yeah. What else? Anything else? The things that I heard were like fun, laughter, creativity. Really, these are all things that we use or have happen when we engage in play, right? In a lot of ways, both of these stories are about play. And what's interesting is when you don't have anybody to play with, it can be difficult to play. But Bella found a way to play, and she was having legitimate fun. And when you're sitting in the car for 50 minutes, wrapped up in your seatbelt, you know, and you got to do it three to four times a week, depending, that's not necessarily a playful environment, but Ava and her friends kept finding ways to play. I spoke a couple weeks ago about how I thought our students have a lot to teach us about curiosity. And today I want to talk about something else I think that they could teach us about, which is play. So we're going to talk about play here in a few minutes. But first, before we do that, I'd like to pass a piece. BCM, you know, is a place that has its own way of doing things, and it's its own unique kind of place. But sometimes we do those things really well, and sometimes we don't. But underneath all of it, we always have this hope for peace for each other and peace for ourselves with each other. It's a really deep intention of ours, I believe. So that's why I want to share the peace now. So may the peace of the Lord be with you. You guys can greet each other for a minute here. I've got a scripture for us. This comes from Luke. They were hoping to catch him in his words in order to hand him over to the rule and authority of the governor. This is talking about Jesus. "Teacher," they inquired, "we know that you speak and teach correctly. You show no partiality, but teach the way of God in accordance with the truth. Is it lawful for us to pay taxes to Caesar or not?" But Jesus saw through their duplicity and said to them,
"Show me a denarius. Whose image and inscription is on it?" "Caesar's," they answered. So Jesus told them, "Give to Caesar what is Caesar's, and to God what is God's." And they were unable to trap him in his words before the people. And amazed at his answer, they fell silent.
Who knows what the word gospel means? Good news. The good news today is this is a short talk. Short and sweet, because we're going to be cleaning the building afterwards. So I'm going to try and keep it pretty short. I think there's plenty of things we could consider from this scripture passage I just read. But there's a few I'd like to kind of hone in on, or maybe just one thing really. But the first part that I'd like to consider is from that first sentence that says, they were hoping to catch him in his words in order to hand him over to the rule and authority of the governor. What do you guys notice about this sentence? Anything? Is there anything you notice?
I think that phrase is interesting. Catch him in his words.
Yeah.
It's very
interesting. What else? What else do you guys notice? Yeah, they were obeying the authorities. What else? Anything? Why was it a big deal to catch him in his words?
Discredit him.
Discredit him? Sure.
Wouldn't the government then take care of him? They wouldn't have to get their answer.
Yeah, which is kind of a big deal. It's like this whole thing is pretty serious, right? And they're trying to make it really serious. They're trying to get the government involved. It's life and death kind of stuff. And it only gets more serious because then whose name do they invoke shortly after? Whose inscription? Caesar, right? In case you guys didn't know, a bit of historical reference. Just like Ron Burgundy from the movie Anchorman, Caesar was kind of a big deal. And all that to say, the stakes were really high. Jesus' reaction is really interesting to me. You know, usually when you hear scriptures read or people discuss scripture, they get really solemn, you know. But I wonder if that solemnity doesn't really do scripture a great service all the time. Because contrary, I think, to probably the most common held belief, just because somebody's solemn or something is done in a solemn way, doesn't really in any way make it more true or poignant, does it? Sometimes, maybe less so. And I'm wondering in this story if you've ever thought of or pictured Jesus not as being solemn. You know, show me the inscription on the coin. But what if instead he has like a playful smirk, right? What if it's kind of like, oh, you poor suckers, you think you're going to catch me in my words. You thought you had me, you know. He's like having a little fun here. What if he's having a little fun? I like to picture it that way. I even like to think of like the Pharisees are walking away and they're kind of bewildered and amazed at this whole interaction. And Jesus kind of looks over at a couple of disciples and is like, you know. Like he's having a little fun, maybe. I can't say that he really is, but I also can't say that he's being very solemn, can I? Right? That's just the way we always assume it. But I do think, actually, that play maybe fits better here. Having a little fun maybe fits better than being really solemn. As we mature as people, somewhere along the way, we start to reserve specific times for play. And these days that seems to happen younger and younger. We have these things we call play dates, which for me are just totally completely lame. Like a play date should be an unlocked open front door with the wide, beautiful, and dangerous world out there to go explore in. So students in the room, for most of you, it's probably already happened that people have started telling you that there's a time for play and a time to be serious. And if there's one thing I hope that you remember from this talk, it's that nearly all times, I believe, are times for play. almost every time. I will admit most people will disagree with me. But I think the truth of it is that a wise person knows how to play in pretty much every scenario. I don't mean necessarily just being like all out silly and stuff like that, which is actually really fun and totally fine. But I mean like any kind of play. If you think of the story I told about Bella playing that card game, she had nobody to play with. It really wasn't a time to play, but she could still make it play. It just came innately to her as a young child. And as we mature, we tend to start kind of knocking that out of each other, right? But when you engage in this world with creativity and imagination, two things of which every single one of us is born with buckets and buckets of, you can turn almost anything into a game. And when this talk is over, we're going to clean the building. It's a lot of hard work. Or is it? Can it just be play? Can it be a moment of play? So students, a little more specifically for you, have you ever heard the phrase like schoolwork or homework? Yeah, you could potentially turn that around. School play, home play. I know it sounds really lame, but I'm telling you, when you can flip something into play, you flip the script, and suddenly the power that you were giving it over yourself goes away, and you're the one with the cards. That's one of the things that play can do for you. When Jesse was three, we knew I'd get to you. When Jesse was three, we had this broken Pez dispenser of Mickey Mouse that Jesse thought was Pinocchio, and he called him Nokio. And it was broken. The thing wouldn't even extend anymore. And the ear of Mickey Mouse was chipped off. And I saw him multiple times play with Nokio for hours. It was the lamest, brokenest toy. And he could make it work. And there were a lot of other toys he had options with. We can make play out of most anything. And we're born that way. And we kind of beat it out of each other over time. Most of you know that I own a painting business. I've now been painting at least part of the year for 37 years straight. When I started high school, I had been painting at that point for 3 years. And so in high school, painting started to feel really monotonous and boring and a bit like the busy work that teachers might give students in classes and stuff like that. And it was mindless and just kind of painful. And then one day I was like, wait, I could throw my imagination into this painting thing, you know? And so I started turning it into a game. And I imagined that painting was an Olympic competition and each task was its own event. And throughout all the days, I just would, you know, when I was cutting in, I imagine like there's like a lineup of guys and they're cutting in this thing and we're all doing it and people are watching and they're amazed and stuff. And then like, and then it's like, who did it the fastest? How clean was it? And all that. Anyway, it was just a game. It was a fun way to pass. It was actually fun. It was a fun way to pass the time. The funny thing was I got faster, I got cleaner, and I got better, and I always won gold. Yeah. So, So I'll let you in on another secret here. My painting business is pretty big now. I employ roughly 35 guys or so. Most of the guys that I employ have families. They have kids. There's more than a few that are grandparents. They have mortgages. They have cars. They have bills to pay. They have all of that. And they depend on me. They depend on me to find them work, to have it organized, ready to go. All of that, it's kind of a lot of responsibility. Most of what I do now is just like talk to clients and organize and all that kind of stuff. But there's a lot that falls on my plate that I'm responsible for. It's kind of, you know, like Ron Burgundy, I'm kind of a big deal. And here's the secret, it's still all play to me. I still make it play. If I didn't, I mean, I'm just talking to people who are obsessing over colors over a house that's probably their fourth house. It's ridiculous, right? But I can make it play, and it works out pretty good. None of the things that I do are necessarily particularly fun with work anymore, but I'm actually able to make them fun because I could turn them into play. Most anything can become play. I thought of a few side effects of play. There's actually tons and tons, but I cut myself off here at 10. But here's a few side effects that I've noticed about play. First, it helps you not take yourself so seriously, which is far better for everybody if you don't take yourself so seriously. Second, it helps you trust yourself, and it helps you trust others. Third, it highlights all of the wonder in the world. You kind of see the world as something that's playful. Fourth, it does away with most of your stress. There's really nothing to be stressed about when you're playing. Fifth, it leads to a lot of laughter. I remember one time, Old World, we were painting that was like a business space. The outside of it is this condo complex, and the lower levels in Keystone. Lower levels were businesses. And Kent and me and like Chris Richmond, a couple others, were painting. And I mean, it was like 1 o'clock in the morning, and we had been doing nothing but laughing, like so much, so long, so loud. And Kent looks up, and there's this, we're like in front of this office where these people were in front of computers and just the most solemn faces. And they were just like, it wasn't because they were doing computer stuff. You can play when you're doing that, but they weren't. And Kent just looks up and he goes, look at these poor people. He goes, look at these poor folks. Look at them. They haven't laughed yet today. You know, and they hadn't. We'd been there, hadn't heard a peep out of it. In the meantime, we were all just like screaming and laughing and having the best time. All that to say, it leads to a lot of laughter. Sixth, it opens possibilities that you can never imagine because you engage so much creativity in what you're doing when you're playing and imagination. Seventh, it puts all sorts of fears aside. There's really not a lot to be scared of if you're playing, right? Eighth, it as far as like the sixth one I said, it opens possibilities, and eighth is related because it deepens your imagination and your curiosity, right? The more you play, the more imaginative you become, the more curious you become. Ninth, it makes heavy things light. The world is full of so many heavy things. That's without a doubt. But really wise people, the heavy things don't feel so heavy, and they're able to engage with them. They feel much lighter because they can play with them. Tenth, it opens life and floods your world with grace. It does these things and a whole lot more, even in really serious scenarios, like the one where Jesus' life is literally at stake and people are trying to catch him in his words. And I like to imagine him playfully and snickeringly with his buddies, you know, getting the goats of the Pharisees, so to speak. I could go on, but we got a lot of cleaning to do with the building. So I have two last thoughts. First one is for students. Students, don't stop playing. You guys are good at it. The older you get, the less of it you'll see, but don't stop playing. The people around you who are engaged in life in real ways will really appreciate that you can play when you're older. There's really almost never a reason not to be playing, or never a scenario even. Adults, whatever that means, don't relegate playing to when you hop on your mountain bike or go skiing or the like. Make your life play. Most everything can be play. I think Jesus might have been having a bit of fun shutting down the Pharisees, even though it was super serious business. Most everything can be play, from parenthood to prayer. So I encourage all of us to play. That's all I have for today.